five presentations. As I said, mine will start with the conceptualizing what it is that the department do, and then the three branches will present very briefly, and then we will go over to the climate change work. Chairwe, there's also a request in the agenda that came to us around the budget vote meeting. Now that information is in here, and I have the CFO here, should you wish to go through the detail, or you just want to go through the summary on that. I think we'll be guided by yourself over the summary of the thanks, CFO, so we'll do that immediately after my presentation. Just the rest of the members are chief directors and acting EDGs. Our CFO, I'll just go around the table, is Esther Macau. Next to her is the chief director responsible for the Green Scorpions, our environmental management inspector, Sunny Boy Patela. Ms. Laura Nteo is specifically responsible for our coordination, our sector work in large, also the green economy, greening, and the work with local government. The link with SALGO, etc. is through her. Next to her is Mr. Kamal Pillay, he's the acting deputy director general for corporate affairs, so that is facility security, all of that sort of stuff. Behind is Christine Fisher. She is a director responsible for hazardous waste, and also standing in for the chief director responsible for waste. Ms. Rupa Singh is the chief director for communication, acting chief director for communications. Sibong Kiseni is the director in the office of the DG, also coordinating parliament to work what we're doing. Ms. Veronica Spain is our director budget manager, and she's obviously involved with the budget vote, etc. And then Dimple Makotakoto is my right-hand person. I got it wrong. I added a toko. Only one Makoto. And she is very much responsible for the business performance, so the strategic plan is her output, and then also in terms of the reporting and coordinating the work that we're doing with Parliament. I think that is the chief general. It's in our ministry, the parliamentary officer from ministry, and Kwanele, you know, is the parliamentary officer in our department. So this is our team. Chair, our presence is just an indication that we do take Parliament and the select committee very, very serious. We value your oversight and your input into our work, and that's why we bring the people that are responsible at a high level to come and address you.
Thank you very much. I don't think we must waste time. We must go straight to our agenda, which says briefing by the Department of Environmental Affairs on their strategic plan and budget, as well as the following issues: progress in the preparation for COP17, green paper on climate change, engagement with provinces and local government to address climate change. I think I must go straight to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The presentation is in the fact that it's provided to you. I cannot see the screen, so I hope it's been managed. We can go to the slide about the work that we're doing. What I will be presenting to you is to understand the context of our department as the leader of the environment sector, when we are dealing specifically with the provinces, with other national departments, etc., as the leader of the environmental sector. I'm going to touch on that a little bit. And then the second, into the next slide. And then I'm also going to just go in terms of the second part of our work, which is the deliverables that the department is specifically responsible for. If we then go into the next slide. Of course, our mandate starts in the Constitution. So Section 24B of the Constitution says that all South Africans have a constitutional right to an environment that is not harmful to their health or well-being, and to have the environment protected for the benefit of present and future generations. The Constitution also indicates in the shareholders of the environmental management is a concurrent conflict between the provincial and national sphere, and therefore the importance to
selection.
The legislative framework, the legislation that we implement is listed there. Importantly, the National Environment Management Act, the National Environmental Management Areas Act, the Biodiversity Act, the Air Quality Act, the Waste Act, and the Integrated Coastal Management Act. Those are the key pieces of legislation that we implement. As a sector, we lead the sector, and in our sector we respond to the concerns as identified in the state of violence report. In the slide there, we've indicated what the problem statements are, and what the critical sector outputs are. Again, I want to emphasize, these are not outputs of the department, it's outputs that the department coordinates for the sector, so the work that we do specifically with the provinces, other national departments, etc. So the first work, the first problem statement that we're dealing with is our continued reliance on fossil fuels resulting in greenhouse gas emissions, that we are amongst the world's top 20 greenhouse gas emitters, and that our ozone depletion kind of keep on impacting on health and well-being. In terms of our responses as a sector to that is the reduction of emissions in CO2, or the entire mitigation actions in terms of climate change, and we'll hear more about that when Peter is in. We work around the renewable energy deployment in collaboration with the Department of Energy, and then adapting to the impact of climate change. Again, I'm not going to elaborate on that because Peter will be talking to that. The second set of concerns or environmental issues that we need to look at relates to air pollution. I'm not going to read through all of these there, but that the exposure to deteriorating air has a wide range of health and well-being impacts for the society, and generally it's the poorest of the poor that suffer the most as a result of this. Our response as a sector is to ensure reduction of atmospheric pollutants, continued rollout of the cleaner fires campaign to improve specifically the issue about air quality in low-income dense settlements. The next set of problems in the problem state to deal with waste. We talked here about poor waste management in general, lack of waste services, the whole issues around hazardous waste, healthcare, waste, waste, also known as medical waste. You would be aware of all of the problems associated with medical waste as reported widely in the media. We're talking about mine dumps and particulate coming from mine dumps, as well as the actual mine drainage contribution of it. Again, this is not directly the department's responsibility, but we work with in the sector to improve performance in this regard. Our sector output in this regard is basically to have less and better managed waste. And that deals both with setting minimum service standards, assisting both provincial and local governments to waste, to manage waste better, and also insist on industry dealing with their waste better. The second area there talks very much about the impact of mining on the environment and on our natural resources. This is the direct response of the Department of Mineral Resources, but as a sector, we respond to it through the outcomes way, and we deal with it in two ways. The one thing is in terms of alignment of regulatory processes, and the second part of the work is to deal directly with the owner's mind for the habitation and closure of these mines. And thirdly, we are also working on mining in sensitive areas through the outcome team approach. Thirdly, on that slide, a set of concerns related to land degradation and soil erosion. And our response to that is a wide variety of actions to sustainable land use management. And that includes spatial planning through various instruments, biodiversity planning instruments, environmental management frameworks, etc., to ensure that we have more sustainable land use management in the long term. In terms of biodiversity, the State of Environment Report 2007 State of Environment Report highlights a couple of concerns. I'm only going to talk about three, four here. The first one is the inadequacy of the protected areas network to adequately protect all of the biomes and ecological types in the country. Secondly, is the exploitation of our natural resources, both in terms of fauna and flora, in an unsustainable manner. And then thirdly, we talk also about the threat of alien and invasive species with detrimental impacts on both biodiversity and water availability. Lastly, in this area of biodiversity overlapping with water availability is the issue about wetland destruction. 50% of the wetlands in South Africa have been destroyed and have been converted to other land uses, and that again has a severe impact on our water security, both in terms of quality and quantity. The sector output to address these things is the restoration and rehabilitation of degraded ecosystems, the expansion of the conservation estate, protected ecosystems and species being regulated, and the eradication of alien and alien invasive species. We also have a program that deals with the formal protection, restoration and rehabilitation of wetlands. If we then go to the water work more, again this is work done by the Department of Water Affairs, but apart from the aquatic ecosystems that we call with us, but the study environment report indicates concerns, severe concerns about water quality and the health of aquatic ecosystems. And our response to that is the water resource protection, as it is indicated in outcome 10, to look at the wetlands once again, and then also to ensure sustainable aquatic ecosystems and their function. If we then go to sector issues around oceans and coasts, the wastewater pollution in our coastal waters or in the marine environment is an area of concern. We also have over-exploitation of natural resources in the oceans and at the coastal zone. And then unplanned and uncontrolled coastal development poses a lot of severe threats, not only to coastal ecosystems, but also in our ability to respond to climate change impacts associated with severe weather conditions and storms. The response of the sector in terms of the coastal environment is we have a very recently promulgated Coastal Management Act, Integrated Coastal Management Act, and we are busy rolling that out. So we have a whole lot of actions that aims at protection of the coastal environment, and we also have through the Protected Areas Act work on the protections of marine ecosystems and marine species. The last area relates specifically to the fact that the environmental applied research capacity has stagnated over the past 10 years, so we have insufficient capacity for innovation and implementation of cleaner solutions and technologies. And our response as a sector to this is the integrated and innovative approaches to natural resource management. We've listed some of our innovations there. And then we also have a research and development strategy for the sector that we are implementing. So this set of slides are work that we as the department lead that relates to the sector and for which our relationship with the provinces specifically is incredibly important. And that is managed mostly through the outcome 10 work that we are doing. If we then go to the department's own responsibilities in terms of where we are deliverable, responsible for the deliverables, I'll speak to the strategic overview. Our department's vision is to have a prosperous and equitable society that lives in harmony with our natural resources. The values of our organization to ensure that we meet this vision is that we want to be a truly people-centered organization that responds to the needs of all South Africans, that we want to achieve the highest levels of integrity, premised on professionalism, quality, service excellence, honesty, transparency, and trust, that we wish to enhance organizational performance through productivity, efficiency, effectiveness, innovation, and continuous improvement. And lastly, to ensure the sustainability of the organization and the sector that we are serving through a month-to-other to maximize impact, return on investment, continuity, and knowledge management. The top priorities for this MTX cycle, the 2011 to 2015 cycle, is firstly to correct the imbalances in our budget, and our CFO has succeeded largely to specifically address our shortfall in compensation of employees in this current year, so that we have sufficient operational and personnel budget for us to support local government to address the air quality considerations, to speak to the issues of waste management, coastal planning, and open space planning in our municipality. The second areas of second priorities relates to governance systems and alignment with outcome team. And there we are talking to other departments and other areas of work. Mining remains an area of focus in terms of both alignment and infirmity, addressing the issues of derelict and owner-less mines, as well as mining in sensitive areas. Integrated permitting, we have started a process in the department where at least all of the permitting processes in the environment sector is integrated, and then over time also integrated in other permitting processes, in order to have to speed up service delivery without compromising environmental quality. Environmental management framework and land use issues remain a priority for us because this provides baseline information and provides the levels of acceptable change that can happen before we have a healthy and sustainable environment. And then lastly, there has been the review of the public entities to make sure that the rationalization of the public entities is not necessary. The preliminary findings for our department is that the four public entities that we do have that report to the department are justified and that there isn't really any need or reason to rationalize those four public entities, which is Sandparks, Sandby, the South African Weather Services, and the Isimangaliso Wetland Authority. In terms of the third set of priorities for the department in this cycle, compliance and enforcement, increasing the presence of the environmental management inspectors as well as the results in specifically three areas of work, namely the healthcare risk waste in medical waste, the rhino poaching or wildlife poaching generally with a focus on the rhino poaching in the short term, and then also in terms of compliance with environmental impact assessments, regulations and requirements. Fourthly, we want to draw on the linkages between climate change, green economy and sustainable development. It is our view that the best response to climate change is sustainable development and changing our behaviours through green economy and initiatives. Climate change is a big priority this year because of the two big areas of work. Firstly, the COP17, on which we're going to have a detailed briefing, and then secondly, because of the finalisation of the climate change response policy or the white paper process, which Peter will also provide more details on. And then we will continue with our key international and national engagement, bilateral, trilateral, multilateral environmental arrangements to ensure a better Africa and to the world. Our goals for the 2011 to 2015-2016 year, goal one is environmental assets that are conserved, valued, sustainably used, protected and continually enhanced. The second goal deals with the enhanced socioeconomic benefits and employment creation for the present and future generations from a healthy environment. The third goal is a department that is fully capacitated to deliver its services efficiently and effectively. And all six branches in our department, or the six programs in our department, respond to one or more of these goals. We have then included for you in the pack how we respond to the Millennium Development Goals, as well as our response in terms of the MTSF or the Medium-Term Strategic Framework's priorities. In terms of the Millennium Development Goals, the department is responsible for Goal 7, which is environmental sustainability. Specific indicators which are also included in our department's strategic plan in this regard relates to the protection of species threatened from extinction, the number of legally designated sites, in other words, decreasing in the unlicensed waste disposal sites of municipalities, the climate change mitigation and adaptation program, and proportion of land protected, or the increase in the conservation system. If we can go to the medium-term strategic framework priorities, speed up the growth and transformation of the economy to create decent work and sustainable livelihood. We are facilitating the green economy strategy, and the green jobs potential is work that DORA is very, very much involved in, and then also scaling up the expanded public works program. In this regard, what is not yet included in the strategic plan is the transfer of the Working for Water, Working for Fire to our program, and that will be corrected in the budget adjustment estimate, where we will be including or append our strategic plan with the plans around that area of work and natural resources management area of work. So to be the whole package of Working for programs. The massive program to build social and economic infrastructure, our responsibility in that regard together with provinces is to ensure that we have an improved environmental impact assessment process to make sure that these infrastructure that are developed is sustainable and environmentally responsible, but also have a system that not delay the much needed together. So in that regard, provincial coordination is incredibly important, and also the rationalization and improved efficiency through regulatory amendments in this regard. In terms of the priority related to rural development, food security and land reform, we contribute to the contribution of environmental assets towards rural development. Many of our rural communities do depend very largely on the environment and on natural assets for their sustaining their livelihoods, and we need to manage that in order to make sure that it is sustainable for them. Cooperation towards the resolution of post-secondary claims and post-secondary support, specifically in our parks, where we have been successful that way. In terms of education, cooperation with the Department of Education and with the South African Qualifications Authority is incredibly important to ensure that the environmental curriculum is continuously strengthened so that we create next generations that know how to work in harmony with our natural resources. In terms of health, there's two very important areas of response to the department. The effective air quality management is one such area, and the second area relates to waste management as well. The fight against crime and corruption, I've already indicated that ensures that improved compliance and enforcement is a priority for us, and for us in the incorporation and cooperation with justice clusters on environmental crime is really important for us in this investment cycle. In terms of cohesive and sustainable communities, again, the environmental sectors and the public works program is incredibly important to reduce our creation to sustainable resources in the environment. Sustainable resource management and use as a priority area. Market-based instruments to promote environmental protection, for example, user charges, emission taxes, and incentives are some of our responses to that priority area. Better atmosphere and a better world, fostering a global sustainability agenda, including an international agenda for climate change, and reinforcing the transfrontier conservation area standards initiative to ensure that we have areas and other conservation areas also within the world. In developing sites, including improvement of public services, the whole improved sector monitoring and evaluation capacity is incredibly important in the work that our containment doing in this regard help us to say where we are and where we are going. We need to improve efficiency, service delivery, development and safety skills. our link to outcomes, and we talked about the Millennium Development Goals, we talked about our responsibility to it. The last area is the outcomes approach of the presidency. We do work in three outcomes, outcome 10, which is obviously the outcome of our sector, particularly on our environmental practice and natural resources. We are the focal point of our listed support and administrative response, and we do have priorities linked to that in terms of education, conservation, and enhancing our environmental natural and medical resources. Proactively plan, manage, and prevent pollution and environmental remediation, while leadership on climate change adaptation and mitigation. Outcome 4 deals with decent performance through inclusive economic growth. Our green economy strategy and sustainable development goals is very key in this regard. And then outcome 11, which deals with creating a better South Africa, a better Africa, and a better world. Our international relations program of the Department is critically important. The last, the start just before I go to the overview of the budget for this coming year, I've spoken about the natural resources management program that has been promised to the project. I certainly need to elaborate on that information. We then go to just very briefly to the MTF allocation and see if OED could add what it wants in here. Our 2011-2012 budget is 2.8 billion. You will see that there is, if you look at the alter years, that it goes down. The reason for that is the very high budget for climate change is 223 million. 200 of that 223 million is for the addition of COP 17, and it's actually being transferred to the Fund for National Relations and Cooperation as COP 17. So our budget and for back to the alter years indicates what is the real increase in allocation. And then the other big area is also that in ocean and coast, you will also see a large allocation need, and that is for our solar vessel, which is the last payment for the solar vessel in this financial year. So you will also see the alter years that there is less budget in that regard. So that is what is the major difference between the total allocation between the 2011-2012 and the alter years, and that's those two big budget items. You will see that our budget is still very, very tight in terms of what we need to deliver, and we are a continuous process of trying to increase our baseline ability to service the state. Steve, I wonder if you want to add anything on the budget list.
I don't know whether you want us to just get through the priorities, but I don't want to add anything.
Do you want to go through the budget priorities? The budget cost is actually included in the tax base, so what we can say our EMP is going to be the priority. It's in the second tax.
Interrogate this. Sunday was Environment Day. Then they talk about Environmental Week. Why I'm asking these questions, I want to do a motion at our, but we've got a funeral in the NCFP this afternoon. I just want to make sure my facts up before I... then there's a slogan, today for a better tomorrow.
Saving tomorrow today.
Saving tomorrow today. Okay, thanks. I've got my story right. Okay, thank you very much.
So it's World Environment Month. they kick off the Golden Mile day on Sunday, always on the 5th of June. Mm-hmm. And this week, there's a big rollout of the whole Golden Mile.
The basic essential Sunday was international environment. International. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Steve, oh, if you could take us through the clarity, thank you, God.
The CEO always indicated we've got a budget of 2.8 billion, which is the document. For the current year 2011-12, we've got 2.8 billion, and as she's just said, the major part being the polar vessel, as well as 200 million for COP, and then from there the budget is, you know, like, it's in line with about 5-6% increase year on year up to 2013-14. And the department is actually six programs, the first being administration. And under administration, we've got the normal executive support, and then our IT and ICT infrastructure, our facilities management, human capital, our corporate governance, and, you know, like, the most of the, right at the bottom, just the money that we have saved for our new building. And the second program is exactly what, starting with the priorities of the department, environmental quality and protection. And if we go to the other slide, that is program two, environmental quality and protection, about 5 million there in the first year. And then from there, it's compliance, environmental legislation and inspectorate, about 32.5 million in the first year. And then the other program then is concentrating on our waste management. That is about 39 million that is allocated in the first year. And as I said, as you can see, the budget is just, you know, like, growing according to, you know, like, the allocation by National Treasury. And if we look at program two, we've got the impact assessment, as well as, you know, like, those activities that are reducing, you know, like, negative impacts to the environment. The allocation there is 43 million in the first year, 45 million, and then 48 million in the outer year. And the second line, that 35 million, is basically our allocation to one of our entities that is Winsa Ibe. So also dealing with, you know, like, waste management and plastic recycling. And then the other allocation of 138 million is also a public entity that is South African Weather Services, for meteorological services, research and weather forecasting. If we go to program three, there we're dealing about, you know, like, where we are responsible for conservation of the oceans as well as conservation and management of the coastal environment. And then in oceans and coast, we've got, you know, like, right on top 20 million, and then 45 million, 47 million, and then 501 million is the polar vessel that I was talking about. And then if we look at it, it's governance of the oceans for the 20 million, coastal zone and pollution control, the 45 million, and then research and oceans ecosystems and international, you know, like, implementation of international obligations for the oceans and the coast, 47 million, polar vessels, 101 million. We can see that in 2012, because we have done, built the polar vessel, it's, the allocation is not there. And we also undertake research voyages to Marion Island, the Gough Island, and the Antarctica. And you can see that the allocation is 108 million because there is for fuel, the vessel, as well as, you know, like the food supplies, as well as scientific equipment that is kept on the vessel. And then if you look at program four, we're talking there to climate change, where we're saying it's for our strategies for adaptation, mitigation, as well as responses to climate change. The allocation for climate change is actually 223 million in the first, you know, like year. See on top there 200 million that is allocated for COP 17 for November and December. And basically in that program, as I said, we're talking about climate change engagements, about 12 million, mitigation of greenhouse emissions, 7 million in the first year, climate change adaptation strategies, about 3 million. We go to the fifth program, that's where we talk about our biodiversity and conservation, you know, like a strategy, and sustainable use of natural resources, as well as poverty alleviation strategies. And in that program, you see in 2011-12, the allocation of 7 million, and then 31 million and 41 million, and also growing according to, you know, the growth that is expected. So the first program's leadership for governance of biodiversity conservation and management. And then the second program, also our activities which are related to sustainable use of our biological resources, as well as the other one, expansion and protection of our conservation areas. And also in this program, we do a lot our transfers. If you look at the following slide number 15, our transfers mainly, which are related to that program, goes to the conservation of our wetlands, which is Isimangaliso, 25 million, and then the other transfers go to for management of our national parks, and that is Sand Parks, and the other allocation goes to our South African Biodiversity Institute. And then we allocate about 164 million. So those are the entities related to this program. If we go to the last program, that is program six, that's where we talk about cooperative governance with the provinces, international cooperation. We also have allocations for poverty alleviation projects, which are our expanded public works projects. So the next slide will talk about how much we allocate for our expanded public works programs. We see in the first year 630 million, 729 million, then in the outer year 846 million. We also have got our South African global sustainable, you know, like agendas for international engagements, our multilateral agreements that we implement in South Africa, as also across Africa, our sub-regional engagements. And the allocation there is 54.7 million in the first year, 58, and then 61 million. And then the other slide goes further. We also do a lot of coordination in the environmental sector. That is where we do our learning programs, our awareness, environmental awareness, as well as our sustainable development strategies, and also the provision of information in South Africa as well as across regions. And we've got an allocation of 45 million in the first year, 47 and then 49. And then also in this program, except for the expanded public works programs, we also allocate to our entities infrastructure allocations for the development, you know, like the South African National Parks, again, Isimangaliso, as well as the biodiversity. We allocate about 127 million in the first year, 122 million, and those infrastructure parks will talk about roads development as well as buildings in those parks. And then in total at the bottom, you can see 857 million that is allocated for coordination as well as the infrastructure development. And that is the summary.
Thank you. Thank you. All the questions at the end, and you can maybe go to the same program just as you can. We then start with EEP.
Thank you. long time of the presentation.
Baseline for the recovery of waste stream.
We're looking at developing policy tools for households to deal with their basic waste collection. We also want to establish a percentage increase on the amount of money that's spent for waste management. There's a section of the Waste Management Act that we want to bring into effect that was not originally brought into effect when the Act was promulgated, that deals with renewables of land. And then we also want to develop our action plan for decreasing unlicensed waste disposal sites.
Sorry, just a matter of clarity. These lamps, or these light bulbs?
Yeah. Right. And then in terms of the strategic objective number four, to deal with air quality. We're looking at the potential negative impacts of significant developments and how we prevent them and manage them. We're looking at amendments to Chapter 5 of the National Environmental Management Act to deal with certain issues relating to specifically Section 24C of the Act and 24D of the Act, and activities that are undertaken in response to emergency incidents or natural disasters. Then one of the other targets that we've set for financial year is doing 80% of the applications for environmental authorization, having them finalized within a prescribed time frame. And obviously provided that the target we've set for the number of applications received within the year does not exceed 400. Then we're also looking at finalizing an environmental assessment and management strategy. Then we're also looking at one EMF, Environmental Management Framework, for an area under development pressure, and progress to a draft status quo based for this year. Then one standard for environmental impact management that we want to develop for the entire country. We're looking for ministerial approval for the Environmental Assessment Practitioner Registration Authority. We're also looking at training 50 additional officials in environmental impact management, so that we bring our total up to 324. We're looking at a framework and protocol being developed for monitoring and enforcement of mining activities, and the mining implementation plan is the final target that's been set there. And in terms of our clean and healthy air, our national air quality indicator, we're hoping to get that to 1.15. It's currently at about 1.17. And then we also, in terms of our air quality monitoring stations, our target is to have 42 air quality monitoring stations around the country reporting to the SAC, which is the South African Air Quality Information System. And those are the targets for environmental quality and protection services.
Amendments to the National Environmental Act that will probably do in the course of the year comes to you returning in the ACOP, sending from the world that the chances are out.
Sure. Yes. Just a clarity. Looking at slide number 9, it is said that provided that more than 200 applications are received in the year. Pardon?
Not more than 400.
Not more than 400.
How we work it is we work on an estimate of what we've received previously, and we allocate a certain, a set of target for that year. Mm-hmm. So our capacity in that is geared towards the target that we skip to in terms of our historical number of applications that we've received.
What happens if they exceed 400 because of backlog and number 6?
I think
one
of them is currency.
Yeah.
All EIA applications now must be done. But what the issue is the commitment in terms of processing it within a specified time frame. Because we built our capacity, so we cannot just add more people to our structure. So we built our capacity on the assumption that we will have 400 applications per year. So we know if we have 400 applications per year at the national level, we can do 88% of those within the prescribed time. So if we have more than 400 applications, we're processing all, but we may not be able to reach the 88% target. But I think that the assurance that I can give the committee is that these targets were set when we still had the regulations before the 2010 regulations. The 2010 regulations resulted in a sharp reduction of numbers. So we are actually less, far less than this point, okay. So we should be higher than 88%.
to the portfolio committee or select committee.
Storm surge is when water from the ocean
rich truth. Cool cell zone, and floods, water, floods, cool cell zone. And secondly, that new release should erosion as shown in the other diagram. We do lose a lot of land, so erosion associated with salts. What are we going to do about that specifically? Next slide. What we would like to do is to understand the recent vulnerabilities, see if we would like to monitor ocean parameters, and we would look specifically at currents, waves, and temperature, and the conduction at the bay, at the bottom there is what we use to monitor ocean conditions, and on the map, on the rock, are the areas in which we have the monitoring. The intention in the long run is to be able to develop an early warning system so that we can tell people in the coastal zone if it is we are likely to have a situation. Next, please. This area is the Antarctic program where we do logistics or where we deliver supplies to the island Marion, to the island Gore, and to the southern based on the Antarctic. We support long-term research using very costly infrastructure that was integrated by the CFO. And there we, together with other nations, encourage sound environmental management as well as participating in the next action system. I'll leave it there, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you very much. It's the one we can rely on. Before I put the presentation, I just want to airport to you. COO touched on around the Constitution. The Constitution is clear when it comes to this area. It says nature conservation is a concurrent function. That means provinces can develop their own policies and legislative tools to deal with nature conservation. However, we have government structures that need orderly. Whereby we discuss legislative tools together with the provinces. You will also notice that in some of those tools, provinces are the implementing authorities. We at national level develop the policy framework and then they implement it. At the same time, the Act allows us to intervene when there are problems. I will make some examples when I present, especially when it comes to innovation. Our relationship with provinces is guided currently by two pieces of legislation. The Protected Areas Act that deals with the management of protected areas in the country, and the Biodiversity Act, that deals with broad landscapes, broad ecosystems, and species. I will skip some of the slides in my presentation. I will put emphasis on those areas where we work directly with provinces. Next slide. The purpose of the program is to promote conservation and sustainable use of natural resources to contribute to economic growth and poverty alleviation. Next slide. In the presentation, I will talk about goal one that was mentioned earlier in the presentation. What we do under that goal, and also talk to some of the strategic objectives that are guided by that goal. And also I talk to the goal that talks about socio-economic benefits. Because as we conserve, we allow utilization of the boundaries. Next slide. Next slide, please. Under this goal one, this is one I'm going to talk to now. Next slide. Here we talk of expanding the protected areas. We want to increase the conservation estate by 0.5% this financial year What we do, we ask provinces what they need to assist in expanding the estate, to develop their own plans in order that it contribute towards that 45%. We are saying this year, we want to have at least 4 provinces with established programs. For some provinces, we cannot say all 9 of them, because some of them will say they don't have the capacity or the money to expand. Therefore, our emphasis, we want to work with 4 to make sure they have established programs. We want to have 5,000 hectares of private land to be proclaimed as part of the conservation estate. We have a guideline document that we've developed together with provinces to achieve that. Next slide. We do have threatened or protected species regulations. We call it the DOPS. This is the acronym. Within the last 4 years, we've been implementing these regulations. These are the regulations that deals with the protection and the use of the so-called threatened species. Provinces are the implementing authorities for these regulations. This year we want, what we have started with amendments, because we have learned that some of the provisions in the DOPS are not implementable. Therefore, what these provinces are amending this. We are also developing norms and standards for the management of damage-causing animals. Damage-causing animals will refer to animals like jackals or any animal that will cause a problem to agriculture. One area here is to determine which is our responsibility, which is the responsibility of agriculture. We felt that we need norms and standards to deal with so-called damage-causing animals, so that provinces can be able to know what to do when there's a damage caused by the animal. We are also drafting norms and standards for the translocation of large herbivores. People trade with species, they move them around the country. Therefore, again, we want to have a guideline document that governs that. There's a hunting industry, which is an economic activity. There are good and bad elements in that industry. What we want to do together with provinces is to develop a document that will regulate the industry so that it's acceptable to the broader community. As people use the species, they are negative impacts. Therefore, we have a scientific authority that will do what we call non-detrimental findings. It will say, as people use the species, are there any detriments being caused by that use? Therefore, we want to make sure that we produce that report per annum to make sure to tell the people that the use of this species, there are negative impacts. We, as I mentioned, that we have DOPS regulations, because again, it's part of service delivery. Where people apply to use the species, we are saying 85% of the applications want to make sure that they are processed in the prescribed time frame. Next slide. We are also dealing with species. People are using species, they are impacted on the species. Therefore, the Act gives us a provision to develop managing plans for those particular species. We are saying this year we want to have a species management plan for the rhino and for the cycad. And also we want to have a draft one for the African penguin, because African penguin is threatened by many things happening in the ocean. We want also to have management plans for the wetlands, because wetlands are linked to water quality and water use. Therefore, in order to secure water for the future, we need to make sure there are plans for these wetlands. At the same time, we want to make sure 100 wetlands are rehabilitated. Next slide. There's an issue around requirements around land uses. Therefore, again, we want to develop a process where people will take into consideration minimum requirements for biodiversity when they deal with land uses. And also, there's an issue about mining that was mentioned earlier on. We want to make sure that there are good practice guidelines for mining operations in the country so that they don't impact on biodiversity. The issue of GMOs, provinces are not much involved in this, but there are applications for genetically modified organisms. application that are sent to agriculture. We sit in that committee whereby we make sure that applications that are processed and approved are not impacting negatively by the person. At the same time, I was saying, one way for each application is processed expeditiously. Next slide. There are also alien invasive species. We are busy developing regulations. We want to make sure that this year, these regulations are published and implemented. Provinces are the implementing authorities when it comes to these regulations. We want to have also a risk assessment framework for the same regulations. And also we want to have draft guidelines for the monitoring and control of the plans developed by implementers. And also want to have a national strategy to deal with this AIS, and also species plans to deal with eradication. For some species, as we eradicate them, they might cause more problems. Therefore, there should be a plan for those particular species. Next slide. I want to talk to this one. Next slide. There's a slide about ecotourism. Because there's no way you can just detach tourism and environment. Therefore, although there's a tourism department, we work closely with them. Therefore, if you see here, there are issues of access and benefit sharing. There's that we're also going to facilitate some of the ecotourism lodges, especially within our project areas. Next slide. On compliance, Isham touched on it. When it comes to rhino pollution, which is a problem as we speak, the provinces have their own enforcement units. But because of the escalation of this, we've established a national structure to deal with the rhino pollution in the country. Even as we speak today, we've deployed, and has been deployed within the borders of Kruger National Park. We're working with SAPS, we're working with the HOPS, we're working with the Department of Justice to deal with all the voting issues. And then provinces have seconded officials to that national structure to deal with that problem. We have also touched with a specialized training for official and the provincial members. Next slide. Next slide. There are issues of transformation in the sector, the wildlife sector. And we want to make sure that we negotiate and initiate a process to make sure that the industry transforms. There's an issue around the use of genetic resources. Most pharmaceutical companies, when they process medicine, that those medicines coming from cell. Therefore, we want to make sure that the access to those genetic resources is controlled in a way that there are beneficial schemes, especially for people with indigenous knowledge. Therefore, we want to make sure 80% of those permits are assessed and processed. We will develop a guideline to negotiate, because if there's a community that owns a genetic resources, they must have skills to negotiate with the pharmaceutical companies when they want access such a resource. We have also want to have at least one co-management agreement facilitated. In the last year, we developed a guideline for co-management framework. Therefore, what we see, at least one province is developing such a framework to make sure that there's a proper relationship with the neighboring communities. Okay? This one deals with the cross-border conservation. Next slide. Right?
Of course, welcome to also ask us questions about what was not presented. Chianito guidance on whether you want to go on with the climate presentation or
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So this is now the three remaining agenda items all going to be presented by Peter, but some input from Mr. Sale on the level of the work.
Oh, please.
Morning, Chair.
Morning.
Morning, members. Honourable members, I'm going to start off this presentation because there is such a concentration this year on the 17th Conference of the Parties around the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. And there's so much interest around climate change. I thought I'd start off with a very high-level introduction on the technical aspects of climate change so that everybody understands what this phenomenon is. But the simple reason is that throughout this year, we are all going to be called on by international journalists or what have you to say what we think about these things. I think a good starting point is for us to have a common understanding of what this phenomenon is and what it means for us. So I'm hoping to do a quick introduction of the technical aspects of climate change. The first thing is looking at the so-called greenhouse effect. Now this is the basis of climate change. And in essence, it's a very simple situation where you basically have sunlight comes through our atmosphere, goes into the earth, gets absorbed by some of the earth, a lot of that heat is also generated out back into the sky, and back into space. However, what we've been doing now is we've been creating a layer of what is the greenhouse gases that actually blocks that movement of heat outside. So basically, what instead of that heat going out into space, it's now being reflected back into earth, and then it starts it. This whole process where it gets warmer and warmer and warmer. And this is the basis of the greenhouse. If you grow vegetables in a greenhouse, you put glass up, sunlight goes through the glass, goes into the greenhouse and bounces against the glass and basically makes this house warmer and warmer. And that's what's happening to the planet. In terms of what's causing that, it is quite clear. And this graph shows, for example, that one of the major causes that's causing this stress of this climate is carbon dioxide and these other greenhouse gases. And these carbon dioxide is from basically, largely, is from the burning of fossil fuels. So, whenever we burn coal, petrol, oil, these are fossil fuels. These were past species that were laid down millions of years ago that were turned into fossils. And instead of putting these fossils in museums, we're putting them into our cars. And we're burning them. And we thought we could do this for the last 100 years. We thought we could quite easily take this non-renewable resource that was laid down millions of years ago and burn it and without any consequences. But unfortunately, the chickens have come home to roost, in our lifetime, and we're now having to pay the piper. These greenhouse gases are the things that are causing this layer around the earth that is slowly warming up this planet. In terms of where we are, the reality is that global climate change is not kind of a theoretical scientific issue. It's a real issue, one of the greatest challenges to the planet and its people right now, and it's being measured and it's happening now. Just on the plane down this morning, just reading in the Star newspaper, a small little article said that, for instance, evacuations due to extreme weather events around the world have doubled in this last year. So, the year before last, 16 million people were displaced or moved from this extreme weather event. It's now up to 40. So we're sitting in a sort of situation where things are happening as we speak. And as you can see from the slide, these are observed things in our model. Global mean temperatures are increasing. Our sea level is rising, slowly but surely. And things like, for instance, snow cover around the world is reducing through this increased temperatures. And then you can see from the presentation, there's a web address, which is a link to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which really provides the best insight into all the climate change science around, because it's basically an amalgamation of all the good science that's published. So what is causing this? I've already mentioned this. But this is trying to put to bed any of those theories of, for instance, climate change is caused by a natural phenomenon and it's the sun getting closer to the earth and it's this and what have you. The reality is that we are almost entirely certain that we are causing this. And this demonstration here shows a picture of the actual temperature increases around the world. And that's the solid white line, which is the observed temperatures. That blue line that comes across there now is basically a model of the current temperatures using only what we call natural forcing. In other words, this is climate change or greenhouse effect caused by natural causes. Volcanoes, sunspots, activities. And as you can see, that blue line, the actual measured line of temperature, doesn't fall within that blue line. The pink line, however, is a model of our temperatures using both natural and unnatural, anthropogenesis, aspirating stuff. And as you can see, the pink band of modeling coincides very clearly. But basically what we have is a situation where the modeling has shown that really it is our burning of fossil fuels. We can't blame anything else. It's our activity that's actually causing this. Even at our own weather station, just down the road here, that is the graph that shows what we are measuring in terms of atmospheric carbon dioxide at head point. Cape Point is one of the few global atmospheric watch stations that are working in this one. We are a proud host of one of them. And you can see that this is measuring this continuous line that is going up in terms of carbon emissions. What I also want you to notice is that you can see the line basically have a bit of a wobble as well. And that bit of a wobble, as you can see from the graph.
Sorry, we don't have it in our school. Your line must have gone off the graph.
No. There's an elevation. This slide is hidden behind the elevation. I'm sorry. But you'll see from this basically that there is a slight wobble in this increase, and that is basically the Earth reader. Is that in winter, When the leaves of the trees fall, what have you, they release their carbon at their store. But in summer, when the new growth starts, it absorbs carbon. And because of that, we have this breathing in, breathing out. In actual fact, certain artists have taken advantage of that. They've sort of shown us this picture of the green stuff is the earth lungs. And you can see the damage caused to this part of the lungs. That is basically what we're doing as well. The destruction of our rainforests, reducing the earth's capacity to absorb carbon dioxide. In fact, they take it to this level where they have this poor individual flying through the trees and then suddenly there are no more trees anymore. In terms of what we are contributing to greenhouse gases, we as a nation contribute around 461 megatons of carbon dioxide per year. That is 461 million tons of carbon dioxide in the world. Where does it come from? Well, 2% of that comes from waste. It's basically stuff we put into landfill sites where it composts and it releases methane gas, a very powerful greenhouse gas. So our waste is causing 2% of those emissions. Industrial processes themselves cause these things as well. For instance, the making of cement, for example, the calcining process where we take lime and we break that lime and make cement, that is also a response to greenhouse gases, and that 7% of our greenhouse gases are from those industrial processes. Agriculture itself, because it uses high levels of nitrogen fertilizers and so on and so forth, it also leads to emissions, and so therefore agriculture is responsible for around 8% of our emissions. But as you can see from this is where the big hits lie. 83% of our emissions, 381 million tons, comes from energy. And I'm going to break up that energy a bit more. In terms of that energy, 3% of the energy, 3% of our total is from fuel combustion of commercial, institutional, residential, agricultural, and forestry, that's where we're burning fossil fuels and those applications. This is also burning fossil fuels in manufacturing, industries, and construction. That's 8% of our total. Our transport is 9%, but this is a particular figure that is growing. Just remember, this figure is based on our last greenhouse gas inventory we had to give to the United Nations, which was basically at 2000. 2000 is actually a time long before the time when we were actually putting 50,000 new vehicles on our road. So this transport figure is growing dramatically. Fugitive emissions, solid fuels. These fugitive emissions are emissions that we didn't expect. They're not from a smokestack where they're... This is purely from mining operations. When we do coal mining, for example, we release methane gas, especially when we do open cast mining, and methane gas is a very powerful greenhouse gas that is released from the mining operations. The fugitive emissions from oil and natural gas are the emissions that we have from our refineries and from oil production. But as you can see, once again, the bulk of it, 48% of the total emissions is caused by fuel combustion and energy industries. This is basically Eskom. Eskom's coal-fired power stations are responsible for 48% of our total emissions. Which is a fun type. They are responsible for 37% of our total, that's Eskom coal-fired power stations. The remaining 8% and 3% is from Sasol, our coal to liquid plants. And in actual fact, the Sasol Secunda plant is the world's largest single source of greenhouse gas emissions in the world. One factory. So we're huge victims of climate change, but we're also not innocent victims. We've done, from 2000, we've actually done a bit of a look to see what our greenhouse gas profile looks like since then. And as you can see, since 2000 to now, our energy emissions have grown quite dramatically. And it's not because we've built any new power stations, although we're already in the process of doing so. It's because of the energy crisis, we've actually been using those power stations far more than we ever did in the past. In other words, to avoid things like load shedding and what have you, it's basically utilizing our coal-fired power stations far more than we've ever done before. So, all of our emissions have been rising. This is how we stand as a nation, looking at our carbon intensity. Now, what does carbon intensity mean? Carbon intensity is a measure of how much carbon we release into the atmosphere, how many greenhouse gases we release into the atmosphere, divided by how much the product we produce, GDP. And so this gives you an indication of countries' carbon efficiency. Do we release these carbon emissions and actually get some benefit out of them? And at what cost? And if one compares, South Africa is now one of the leading carbon-intensive countries in the world. So in other words, we produce a huge amount of carbon for very little return. China was used to be way ahead of us, because China is now going into renewable energy and all these different things, and increasing the energy efficiency and what have you. You can see that red line, the red blue streak of China is dropping substantially because of their interventions in that. And South Africa is kind of staying at a pretty energy inefficient population. What have we been observing? Basically, since the 1950s, there's been a steady increase in South African temperatures across the country. There are very few stations where we've seen no trend or a negative trend. It's all been mostly positive. In terms of the predictions that are done, the modelling that has been done for us by our top scientists, they say that under the current levels of greenhouse gases, these emissions, in the coastal regions, and luckily being at the coast, we basically have the ocean which buffers some of the temperature increases, so the ocean has some absorbed some of that temperature. The coastal regions don't have these dramatic changes, but they're quite impressive. By 2050, there will be a 1-2% degree increase, and in 2100, a 3-4 degree increase. But in that, in Gauteng, for example, by 2100, there will be a 6-7 degree increase in temperature. That is the average increase in temperature. Which basically means by, if things go on that aren't being stopped, is that areas of this country will basically be unlivable. It'll be super too hot. Looking at the modeling that we've done around rainfall, is that by 2050, if we look at this ascent line, which is the median of predictions, these show that, for instance, there is a potential that there may be an increase in rain in the eastern side of the country during the spring tides. But if one looks at the bottom one, which is a low surface and what have you, there are the possibility of reduced rainfall, but throughout this process you can see there's very little colour on the western side of the country, which means that rainfall is going to change very little around the Western Cape, or may reduce certainly around the area of Cape Town. So what's the big deal? The reality, of course, of increased temperatures is increased evaporation. So even though rainfall may not change, the amount of water that is available to us is dramatically reduced. So, in terms of the South African impact on agriculture and biodiversity, this is a map that shows the current situation of favourable soil moisture levels. And as you can see, on the northwestern side of the country is where we have the dry areas. Of course, this is the Matabeleland and the Karoo, and we're having very dry. By 2050, those soil moisture layers have reduced to almost zero. So in other words, any agriculture that's happening in this area is just impossible for that to happen. And you can see that, for instance, the current areas that are now under are favourable for growing on a longer basis. But this is not just crops, this is just pure biodiversity. To put that in another way, these are the biomes of South Africa. These are these areas that we look at the South African deserts, the forests, the plainforests, the grassland, the Nama Karoo, the savannah, the succulent Karoo. These are the areas that we have as the major big biomes that we have. By 2050, those biomes will have shrunk. And that white area, the stuff that has no colour whatsoever, will have a atmosphere that is unknown in South Africa today. So in other words, there's going to be a climate that is unknown today. So even if we're talking about alien species and what have you, is that we'll have a completely alien climate for almost 45% of the country. So, what do these impacts mean? In the agriculture sector, there are going to be some winners and some losers. Because some areas may get slightly wetter, so there could be some good crops in some areas, but in others, they're going to be losers. Small-scale and homestead dryland farming, these are farms that are mostly rural, poor people, who cannot afford irrigation or having dryland farming, they are the most severely hit. Mm-hmm. If they have changes in rainfall patterns, that means that all their indigenous knowledge they've had around farming for centuries is no longer holds true. Under some scenarios, maize production in some rainfall areas and fruit and cereal is likely to be significantly adversely affected. Commercial forestry is vulnerable. Rangeland is vulnerable to bush encroachment. And this is something that we're already seeing. If one looks at photographs of, for instance, the areas around eastern Limpopo and Mpumalanga, and this is the natural land, and one looks at the photographs of that savanna areas, one would see grassland and caves and corn food. Now what one sees is dense forest. And that's because the carbon that we're putting into the air is actually fertilizing the plants. Which sounds like a fantastic thing. It means more things are growing. But that's the essence of it means that if you're a cattle farmer, there's less grain because of more bush. Alien invasive plants will spread far more dramatically because they'll adapt to these new temperatures much quicker than our own. In terms of the stuff that we mentioned around the oceans and coasts, an area that needs far more research, luckily our section being in the ocean and coast, are going to be focusing on building our information base far greater than it is now. But there's already warming of the Earth's coasts. These currents that we base our fisheries on and our biodiversity have changed. The impacts are dramatic. Health impacts are exacerbated by disease burden complex. I mean, for instance, if we're in a country that already has a problem with TB, HIV, and so on, the health impacts of climate change make it just put extra stress on the system. Extreme weather events, of course, droughts and floods, increase the disease problem. The damage that is caused, we saw some slides in Mondi's presentation, as well as of these houses and the coast that are being washed away. There's a conservative estimate that we've lost R1 billion per year because of these kind of events, extreme weather events, storm surges, floods, droughts, and so on. To put us in the context of Africa, Africa being the continent of this has contributed the least to greenhouse gas emissions. It's likely to have some of the most dramatic impacts. You've heard this wholesome situation around us trying to maintain global temperatures below 2 degrees. But as you can see from this picture, even at 2 degrees, we are then putting 600 million people under water stress. And we're still saving that to zero. But in terms of the big loser there, after 2 degrees, is that one of the ones that is not shown here is that there is one plant kingdom. It's the smallest plant kingdom in the world. That's the only plant kingdom that is in the borders of one country. And that plant kingdom is called famous. The only place in the world that this occurs. And in terms of these climate predictions, they say that 80% of our famous will be extinct by 2100, which means famous ceases to exist. In other words, the smallest plant kingdom on the planet ceases to exist. So that is the challenge that we face with climate change. It is real. It is happening now. We are measuring its impact right now. So the next question must be, so what the hell are we doing about it? So Chair, I'm going to go through this, and I'm not going to go into a huge amount of detail, but I'm just going to give you some indication of what is on our climate change program this year. The five key priorities for the department. And I'll just unpack each one of them quickly. The first one is the South African negotiating position. Chair, as you're aware, we are hosting the conference of the party this year soon, at the end of November to December. Which means that South Africa is what they call COP president, the president of the conference of the parties. And as the presidents of the conference of the parties, we are responsible for trying to facilitate an international outcome that actually benefits the planet and starts dealing with the issues that I just spelled out to you. However, because we're the host doesn't mean that we give up our sovereign rights, we also have our own position. And so this is one of the areas that we're going to be doing. We're going to be doing this, as we do every single year, is developing a South African negotiating position where our minister will take into the conference of parties a South African position. The second area of focus will be the National Climate Change Response White Paper. Now this is really an exceptionally important thing. This is how South Africa, as a nation, is going to respond to climate change at a high level. And basically what has happened is that there have been, the Green Paper was published in November, and since then there have been a series of provincial workshops. Some of them very, very well attended, others not so much, but still happening in every single province. We had parliamentary hearings, we went through a NEDLAC process, a place with the social partners, a presentation with arm wrestling around what we should do as a nation. And the feedback from us is definitely that we need to do something. The response to the climate change green paper has not been one of this is rubbish, we don't need to do it. It's always been very positive. In actual fact, the majority of leaders have said we're not being ambitious enough. We're saying the right things, but we need to be far more focused, more targeted. So since then, we have pulled in all the public comments, and there are over 4,000 specific comments. And we've now started work on the draft of the white paper. We had a workshop in April, pulling together the initial document, and now we have a very, very started document looking at the finalization of the white paper. And that has been circulated through the government committee of the provinces. And over the next couple of weeks, we're going to be finalizing those comments with a deadline that by the end of this month, after almost a 3-year participatory process, we have to hand in an initial white paper to the cabinet process by the end of this month. The third priority that we're going to be looking at is the South African national communication. Now this is associated very, very much with our policy. The second national communication is simply our commitment to the United Nations Framework Convention that we will tell the world about how South Africa is responding to climate change and how South Africa is being impacted by climate change. So this is a document, a scientific document that basically summarizes the top scientific research that we have in the country. It is published at the same time as the white paper. It is to a large extent, it provides the scientific reference to the policy. And it will be finalized in the same way as the white paper. When the white paper goes to the scientific document will accompany it once again, ask the cabinet's permission for us to submit this in South Africa's national communication to the world. And that will happen as well by the middle of this year. The fourth priority is around the conference of the parties itself. Chair and members, as you probably know, in terms of the conference of the party organization itself, the logistics around the actual conference organizer, what have you, that has been given by the president to the Department of International Relations and Corporations, DERPA, who are the COP president. So they are basically running the COP and are organizing the logistics around the COP. The department is doing stuff that is basically providing support to this process, creating the context for success. And this is what other things we're doing, is that this whole aspect of greening and legacy. One of the things we're going to be assisting Zerko in doing is to try and make a carbon neutral COP. It's a very tall order. A lot of the emissions are clearly from the 37,000 people coming through, flying to the lack of this COP, and the carbon emissions from that is dramatic. But we've already started work on this, and Dora's been leading a very, very exciting program around greening and legacy projects. And we're starting to look at a whole bunch of activities around waste and such stuff, and I'll run through a couple quickly. We have waste collection separation projects on the street. We have things like greening of the hotels and the hospitality industry around the venue. There's a project around non-motorized transport, trying to encourage people to use non-motorized transport, bicycling, etc. There's work around carbon offsetting, so that even if there is a carbon emission, that we try and offset it by planting trees or finding ways of absorbing carbon. And also we'll try and reduce the actual carbon associated with this by trying to buy green energy through the Eskom and the regional power grid, power pool. We'll look at offsetting as well through solar water heating and installation of solar water heaters at Phillips and at Prison Hotel. And also we're going to provide environmental volunteers to assist with raising awareness around the program and all sorts of things like that. The Tukwini itself has a program as well. We've now had a meeting since that, and we've now combined into a combined program of greening and legacy. But you heard about the Mexico City Pact. And that is, for instance, the city of Durban is going to take the greenhouse gas inventory of exactly what their emissions are. They're going to set targets for reducing their emissions, and they're going to agree how far they report this to other municipalities around the world. The last area of priority is the climate change outreach and mobilization program. And this is specifically a program looking at raising general public awareness around climate change. There's a general call, not just from Parliament, not from the provinces, but across the board, that all South Africans need to know about climate change much more than they actually know. And in order for us to respond correctly, to change our behaviours, we mustn't be just regulated. We must actually make the real choices ourselves about what we need to do. And so this is one of the things to inspire so that we start making those climate-friendly choices as well. This program is also going to provide a platform for ordinary South Africans to speak to the minister about what messages they want her to take to COP. And also, we also want to use this occasion to showcase South Africa as a responsible global citizen. As I said, we're not just a victim, we're also a perpetrator of climate change, but we want to tell the world that in terms of finding an international solution, which is the only way we can solve this problem, we as a country are responsible, we understand our commitments, and we will play our fair share. So, this program has, at this stage, has four elements. Provincial climate change summits, and this is basically already trying to harness what's already happening in the provinces themselves. An entire media campaign looking at all media, television, radio, specifically community radio, newspapers, and so on and so forth. The putting together of a climate change expo at the conference of the parties, and support to an NGO civil society initiative called the Climate Train, which is based on educational and real train that's going to travel around the country and to various places and various towns, advertised widely, and school groups began visiting the sunset. The climate change summits initially were just purely events for us to actually start talking about the importance of negotiations, and also trying to keep these voices on the ground about what to say in these negotiations. However, prophecies themselves have said, no, we should utilize these events to actually build general public awareness as well. There must be two goals. We must have the situation that people coming into these summits must be in a situation that once they walk out, they are seen as being understanding of the basic concepts of climate change. And so to a large extent, the programs themselves will be shaped by the prophecies themselves, but there is a generic program that we will present around answering specific questions. What is climate change? What is causing climate change? Why should I be worried about climate change? What is government doing about climate change, which of course talks to our policy? What can I do about climate change, which is the empowering thing, to basically provide the information to ordinary people about what they can actually do about energy efficiency, choice of vehicles, and these sort of situations. The next and last one is, why do we need international agreements? And this is the reality of this international global challenge. We'll be looking for over 170 countries to agree by consensus on actually solving this problem. The reality is simply this. Is that if South Africa became climate angels tomorrow and we had no greenhouse gas emissions at all, if no one else in the world did that, we would still suffer the exact impacts of climate change. So the only solution is an international solution. And the only way that we'll find an international solution is if everybody pays their fair share. And that's what this is about. The summits are timed to happen from August to September, once the white paper is either published or is almost complete, and at least have some time before the conference with parties as well. As far as the media campaign is concerned, the green paper has numerous comments about how we have to raise awareness, and the National Council specifically states that by 2012 we must design, develop and roll out a climate change awareness campaign. But of course, we don't have to wait for that. We all know that this has to happen, so we've started that already. We've taken 7 million land, and we have that sitting with the GCIS right at the moment, to basically secure us media spots in TV, radio, newspapers, and what have you. And members may have seen some of the newspaper adverts over the last couple of months. Slowly starting this process, not a big bang, but a slow build-up that will actually increase dramatically as a popular spot. The community radio stuff has already started, on the 1st of June. And with that, we're not just doing a quick 30-second advert, because that is just not good. What we're doing is we're introducing the concept of climate change on community radio stations through 3-minute mini-dramas that are interesting and fun, and sometimes a bit humorous and what have you, to start teaching people in the world about what climate change is about. We also developed a climate change messaging script, so that when we as government officials and public representatives stand up and talk about climate change, we speak with some authority and we send a message. Then the final aspect, well, the second last thing is the climate expert. This is what we're planning. And it basically is in response to an increasing call for involvement in the public. Some of it's rather naive. Some small companies to put us on the top agenda so we can present about our solar wind. That doesn't happen. The United Nations, this is the United Nations meeting. The agenda itself took an entire meeting in Bangkok just to decide the agenda. So what we've done is we've created an event, or we hope to create an event, right next to countries and parties that can actually start speaking to South African people that are going to be there. In essence, it will provide a vehicle with all the good positive energy that we've been seeing from people, and will provide us with a means of exploiting this very, very high profile international event. So, I'm going to rush through these to do, but this is the International Conference Center in Durban, a big white building in the middle. And the intention is to have an expo that is quite close to the building. Basically, you can get the delegates going through our expo and seeing what South Africa has out there. So, with this, that area But if you know, outside over there, there's the so-called island site, which is basically becomes United Nations territory. It's peace by the United Nations. We have no access unless you are a delegate. However, all the delegates will arrive at this transport hub by bus from their various hotels. And every single day, they'll have to cross that car park to get from the transport hub to the conference center. So obviously, we want to put an expo right in the middle where they have to go. So they have to walk through our next couple. We've done some initial design work about what we're going to look like, and the whole idea is to have a situation where we have exhibitions, but we also have space for live shows, television, what we call industrial drama, industrial theatre, plays, music, and so on and so forth. It's far more detailed planning about what could possibly look like. These are all these mega tents that can house a lot of the exhibitions. The kind of look and feel that we're looking for, and as illustrated in these photographs, is we're trying to get away from the secure sense of this like a bunch of tents. It was a cheap and nasty kind of expo. We're trying to actually make it quite upmarket to show that South Africa has the ability, at very, very short notice, to actually apply its mind and be creative. Here's an example of one of the exhibits that's been put forward to us by South African International Biodiversity Institute. And it's called the Beehive. And in essence, the whole concept here is to provide some kind of a living exhibition that shows South Africa's biodiversity, but also shows the importance of ecosystems. The reality is that ecosystem restoration is one of the major and direct responses to climate change. And I'll give members an example, for example. So there's a mitigation and an adaptation element. If we replant the mangrove forests that were destroyed because we chopped down these trees in the coastal areas and what have you, not only do the mangroves absorb carbon, which reduces our carbon load, but they also reduce the impacts of storm surges. So by creating jobs and the replanting of mangrove forests, we are reducing our carbon, but we're also building up our resilience to the impacts of climate change. And those are the kind of things we're looking for. And this is what this particular beehive will try to do. Facing the stall is a walk-through stall that looks like this. It is modeled on a Zulu beehive hut. It is completely living. The entire structure itself is a living structure. And it's a walk-through where people can actually experience what nature is about, away from the hustle and bustle of these intense negotiations. The living wall has been described as being inspired by these living walls, and as you can see, these are actual walls that are alive, believe it or not. And so this entire beehive will be made up of living parts. This Will Sandby is the gold-winning, award-winning at the Chelsea Fire Show, so they can put together one of these things standing on their heads. Then in terms of legacy, the city of Durban has looked at this and they said, it's a greedy one system. If this is put up at the expo, we would like to move to one of our municipal parks to leave as a lasting legacy of COP and what's an active working environment that means for us. The participants, everybody. This is a South Africa Inc. incorporated event. So it involves business, industry, civil society, NGOs, all three spheres of government, our research organizations, our state and enterprises. Actually, of course, space is limited, so we have to find be very, very picky in what we do here. Our target audience, of course, are the COP delegates, the international and local press, local and especially international donors. We want to, if we exhibit there, we want to get a chance to actually be able to raise funds. But most importantly, the general public and especially the youth. Then the climate train, as I said, this is actually a physical train, the intention being it will go around the country, collecting messages and educating people wherever it goes, and then finally at COP, and you go down to COP, we park the station in Durban, and it will be an extension of our expo. In order to make sure that we have a situation where we maximize the provincial activities around the national agendas as well, is the host province, President Natal, has kindly offered the services of one of their senior managers to us, We'll basically visit every province and database exactly what provinces are doing, and through that try and find a way of maximizing our synergies between the national department and the provinces. And so with that, this person will attend fortnightly meetings, management meetings at the department, so we'll be fully informed of what the work we're doing. We'll visit each province from time to time, and from that we'll compile and maintain a report database on exactly what provinces are planning and what they want to do. We'll discuss and facilitate the alignment and coordination of those provincial efforts with the national initiatives. We'll brief provinces on agreed COP17 and general climate change messaging, so all the new messaging will continue to bring through to the provinces. We'll represent the departments at provincial events where that is appropriate. We'll participate in provincial events where that is appropriate as well. And he'll provide brief updates on provinces on all COP17 related activities. In other words, this individual for the next 6 months is going to be travelling through the provinces and making sure that there's proper cohesion, coordination and alignment of the activities. Then finally, and I just finished this country. This is on a separate presentation, but I've included in this one, is that local government has been very, very involved in climate change issues, and for a very, very good reason. Because when I showed you the profile of our greenhouse gases, that showed you by sector, it didn't show you by geographical location. If one looks at our greenhouse gas emissions, the reality is that it is our greenhouse gas emissions, if one looks at it mostly in our metro, it's not small rural areas that are causing massive greenhouse gas emissions, it's the metro. And so local authorities realize it's where that they are the places where the rubber hits the road in terms of climate change response, whether it be mitigation or adaptation. So there have been a number of initiatives that local government has initiated. From our side, we are going to be completely involved in those initiatives as well. There's going to be stakeholder mobilization from the provincial workshops and what have you, getting involved, getting the local authorities involved. SALGA, the partnership with SB, will host a mayoral summit. And this is a mayoral summit from all over the South African mayors and some of the top mayors from around the world talking about what local government has to do in terms of climate change space. The other aspects around the global news coverage, these are big newspapers around the world that have already made very, very strong commitments. And these are actually exceptionally important. For example, we all know that the United States has not been the greatest player in terms of international agreements, but many of their top municipalities have been very, very aggressive. And so this actually has a way of actually getting all the positive energy and moving it forward. And I think that is about it. Basically, COP is going to involve all key spheres of government. And hopefully through the process that we have to get government committee on climate change, through the deployment of this provincial coordinator, we will start having a situation where we lead up to the look. From a governance point of view, we will show a united face of government, all these spheres of government. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Sorry for that, Father, the members, because I don't have time. That's why I was to take this presentation. As you see, that the members are going thinner and thinner because of other engagements. But I think we have 14 agendas for another item for us only. But what I suggested to honorable members that if one has got some questions, must ask the questions and then the department will respond those questions in writing because we don't have time to engage between us and the department. So I will hand over. I don't mind to waste time. If there's one who wants something, just please and take a drink and then because we don't have any time to hear that, we must have to must pause. We don't have that. So I'll hand over to them, my honorable members, if there's anyone who has some questions. I see honorable Makubela, honorable Lord and me, because we're all in sin now. Yes, honorable Makubela.
chairperson as we have mentioned, can push credit back to the one third get a separate version. The other credit the upgraded and provided the same. Because most of the things here at chairperson, we find that it's a valuable thing which will help the, you know, members of the community. But just because we take it as a theory and it's dramatizing things, it's very, very bad. All right? Let me go to my question, the question that I see on the first parliamentary strategy this year. Here we talk about the impact of mining activities on environmental and natural resources. Here my problem is a generalization of things. Which part in our province, which mine, which have this type of issue, where you can say, in this mine, this thing has happened, we have done this and that, we don't want a general statement, as it's put theoretical here. Number two, land, the mandate and the soil erosion remain a serious challenge and undermining the productivity of our land. Again, which province is embedded with this type of soil erosion? What department has done in order to do this? From 1990 something, this has done, had a very big rain. It caused this ABCD. We have done this. This is not coming forth. Third area is unplanned and uncontrolled coastal development continues to pose severe threats. Can you understand here? Unplanned and uncontrolled coastal development continue to pose a threat. Which coastal or in which site? You come with a statement. I'm from Limpopo, mind you. You talk about the coastal, you must tell me. You know? Okay? This is finished. I will get into this one. The same one, you talk about the acting with digital. This acting, I saw something in the newspaper, I don't want to mention it here, but I'm going to mention it. You know, acting posts until from 2010 till now, critical posts. Acting. You enjoy getting the money there. What do you call it? That's the word. Acting. Never look to sit down and see. A person who's acting on that post mustn't get to that side.
Must be more
you. Yeah. Sometimes. Okay. Digi post. Why are these acting digi? This was the question. Let us get into this one. Very interesting. I was impressed when let us go to climate change. This one. You know, you came with a very sophisticated determination. You know, through the observation comes, you know, come this way, you show the line waving going up. Okay. I was happy when you go just in the middle where you see, you show South Africa. But what are we doing? Let us say we talk about the climate change. And if you have ever read the book of Nehemiah in the Bible, I want to tell you something. Nehemiah was a manager. Nehemiah, one day, very short. He was serving his master, having a cup of wine. But he was worried that morning. He said, my land is having a problem. Will at least go and rectify this?
Now you people have learned, studied in different fields of study, engineers, everything. But we don't see you in the rural areas, sitting there with your mission, sitting, when are we going to have that strategy? That if I'm in Palabura, I'm having this Nehemiah is coming with his group. They're sitting there. They're having the solar system that you have. You can't take the ESCO from Valley River, you bring it to Masisi all the way. You have to come there, adapt it, have your solar system there, have your borehole water, have your water, so that people living around there, they must adapt and grow up that way. You know? We don't have such type of thing. You Nehemiahs, I call you Nehemiahs, you don't go to higher town, suburbs, sit with us there. Drink that sour water. What are we doing with the new strategy to adapt ourselves to those communities? That's my question. What are we doing? Please, you're right. Very interesting. Okay, I'll be very quick. There's another question here. What is that question? It's unfortunate. You were giving a very good clear. Expanding the private land, just yourself. If you go to the definition of private land, you are saying you're going to tell them to expand about 0.5 in order to do the project. How will you go about this? Because there's a lot of land claims and everything. And what is the definition of a private land? This one. It seems as if you are not yet there in this project which you are telling us, because you said we will negotiate, we are in the process, you know, if you go through this thing, you are in the process of doing this. Alright, we want to see the fruit. Yeah, we want to see one province to do this. It seems it's not happening this way. If you can tell us that, no, in this province, we have done this, we have negotiated this. Next year, in this financial year, we're going to do phase one, this one, two, three. That is our worry. Otherwise, I'm not going to bother you with this. Go ahead, right? You see, when you come back, we will definitely question you. But next time, if we can get about two of these of them, we question you nicely. So that, not a question of greeting, but in order to know the process, so that when we go back to our constituencies, I'll be able to explain this thing. We are in our mouthpiece, not a driller. Thank you.
Thanks, Jake, and thanks to the department for the presentation. My big question is here, of course, is pollution, I'm talking now environmental affairs, by mines. And the lack of coordination between the departments, I think, is mineral affairs, environmental affairs, and water affairs. Those three, they all are interlinked, interwoven. Licenses are given for mines in ecologically sensitive areas where mines should not be established. The mining and mineral department doesn't even wait for environmental impact assessment. They just go ahead and give licenses. There are, so one of my colleagues tell me, there's 150 mines that have been given the go-ahead that are mining without water licenses. I mean, how are we going to coordinate all this? Now you say, all right, give you an example. I'll give you an example in Velkom, Free State, my province. There are mines in the center, not of the city, but in residential areas that have ceased mining operations. I don't know when, must be quite a number of years ago. And you've got Zama. They now, some are mining underground, as you read, others, they're on the surface there. smelting, crushing rock that's been left because it used to be loaded onto cocoa bags. They don't even run away. Because we say to the police, well, you know, and the rest of these people, they say, well, we're actually private because it's a mining area. And they said, the only thing we can arrest the people is if they're not South African citizens. And we deport them. Most of you go to Lesotho. This is 2 days later, they're back again. You can't prevent people, obviously, with the price of gold these days, they're selling it for 500 grand an ounce. It's not very well refined. But there's a whole industry there. But this leads to criminality, goes to everything else. It's not just a question of the mines. When are the mines going to be held responsible, those that have ceased operations, to rehabilitate the areas? There is no... This is when you've got your acid mine drainage coming, which is causing even more problems, and it could well happen one day in the Free State as well, when this water comes to the surface. The whole area is hollowed out there. When are the three departments going to come to some conclusive agreement that A, mining rights will not be given until the environmental impact studies have been done, assessments, and if the environmental impact assessment says no, then it's no. But I understand the economy's got to be driven, the economy's got to be going on, but there just seems to be no coordination between the three, and hence the problem goes on. That's the one. Of course, coming back to COP, which is very interesting. Of course, the so-called developed world is close to the developing world. The developed world, let's take a look at Germany as an example. They now are closing down their nuclear plants. We now carry on because we've got a lot of fossil fuels. So we carry on burning fossil fuels. We've got to have electricity. And fossil fuel creates by far the majority of our fuel. And we're carrying on opening power stations, emitting even more CO2 into the atmosphere. But if we stop that, is then nuclear power the answer? Because other countries are now seem to see this inherent problem with nuclear power. And nuclear power is far more expensive than burning our fossil fuel. Obviously, green power, such as hydroelectric, wind power, solar power, that only contributes a minute amount to our power requirements, let's be quite honest about it. In exchange, we might be prepared to switch to nuclear, I don't know what power, to produce enough. If the so-called developed countries pay us, and the so-called developed countries don't want to pay us. So it's a sort of catch-20 situation. I'd just like a little bit broader comment on that. I know this is one of these, I don't know whether there is a solution to it. Thank you.
Only two questions. On this slide, I'm showing this strategic objective and the financial rocket. 60% of 311, which is 90% EMLS, to undergo specialized training. By when? To undergo. We think it's a future perspective. By when? The other one is this one. 75% of received the DEA, the D complaints and incidents, processed and investigated. Okay. If you investigate the thing, what was the outcome of that investigation? Thanks.
Thank you, honorable members. I think next time, as you said, honorable members, we will call the department to issue a assessment and present, and then we'll have time to interrogate the people we have. But today we don't have time to ask more questions. But you have just touched me about the soil erosion. Yes, we have been in the Eastern Cape. In some areas of the Eastern Cape, like there's a lot of soil erosion. I didn't see anyone who had even had talked that to the Department of Water Development to say that what would the department do with these things? Because it's all in paperwork say that those things are going to do by this department takes the ball to another department, and this one takes the ball to another one. So we didn't see the real department that can do this sort of position. So we just need that the Department of Environmental Affairs to see the growth in so many customers with soil erosion. And I've got some few questions. How does the department plan to address the shortfall to the budget allocated for COP 17? National Treasury only provided 200 million towards the event. How will you address this? The other thing is, we cited allocated for 2011 2012 is about 35 million. Can you substitute this allocation and provide details of how this money will be used in the poverty? Can I proceed? Yes, and the other thing, we want to know, can the department clarify the strategy objective 1, compliance monitoring framework for Biodiversity Act and Protected Area Act? And then in program 3, in oceans and coasts, have set broad areas of operation but no real targets have been set for pollution. National Coastal Management Program, ETC, this program has received a substantial budget for this year. So we'd like more details on the implications and targets. I think we've got more, but we've got many to ask, but just because we don't have so many, many documents in front of us, we don't have time for that. So I think that's all for today, and we need to get responses by Friday. Because we're supposed to respond now. So there's no way that we say that next week, one is by Friday.
In the document that we circulated, we have our annual performance plan. Coming to call that the document, our staff plan document, which Cornelia has checked in there, we have the annual performance plan. We have the detail part. We say by when, we say the date, we say it's deliverable. So many of the questions, for example, in terms of where will we be doing soil erosion work, etc., it's in that detailed document which is in the strategic plan. We just lifted the presentation to be at general deliverable level, but we will certainly provide the answers that is there. But most of the questions that you have asked is in the plan. Then in terms of the first area of work, you remember that as Honourable Mabella, you've asked a lot of questions about the mining, etc. The first part of my presentation was about the work that we are coordinating in the sector. So in terms of mining, for example, we don't bear direct responsibility. We are coordinating the sector's delivery against the state of environment supporting outcome. But we will clarify that in our response as well. So that first, the sector detail, you won't find in our strategic plan. It is work that we are doing in the sector, not as the department.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think the department for this presentation, not this presentation, and we will debate
2 weeks
time. Yeah. So we will debate all those things on that day. Thank you very much. Can you see me?
Thanks.
No.